On this week's episode, I talk about Patton Oswalt, The Who, and Marc Maron. Those are all separate events. It wasn't all the same thing at the same time. Anyway, I've been away too long, but now I'm back. I'm your host, Derek Brink, and you are listening to Empty Checking. Hey there, checkmates. It's good to be back with you. I took a couple of months off there. My last show was back in April, and it is now June. It's, in fact, almost July. I'm sorry that I was away for so long, and I want to give you a little bit of an explanation for that, because some of you have wondered, some of you have asked. In fact, I spent some time with someone recently who said, quote, "I used to listen to your podcast back when you did it." So that's how people are probably feeling a little bit about the state of the podcast, and I feel like I owe you a little bit of an explanation for that. There are several reasons that I kind of went on hiatus, and I don't know, maybe this is, as a result, considered season two or season three, maybe, because I did this podcast back several years ago as well. I don't know. Point is, I'm back here, but what happened is, initially, I had a very minor audio problem. And the audio problem really wasn't even with anything that I record the podcast with, but this is a little hard to explain. I'm a fan of setting things up in a way that wires aren't noticeable. Like, I like doing that. A lot of you probably feel the same way with your sound systems at your house or your TVs at your house. I notice that most of you who have the TV, like the flat screen TV on the wall, have the wires hidden somewhere. They're not visible. They're kind of behind it. And that's, I feel the same way about audio stuff and about music stuff. And when I play gigs or when I, say, wire a room for sound, I like to have the wires out of the way and have them not visible so you can't trip over them. They're out of the way. Everything looks nice and clean and angular, and that's my preferred way of doing it. The audio problem I was having required me to get to some wires that were in my office where I normally record the show, and I had to move stuff to get to it, and by stuff, I mean things like my CD tower that holds, like, 1,500 CDs. That kind of stuff. I had wires running behind stuff in a way that they weren't just readily acceptable. There was some work to be done. So I had to get back behind there, and that ended up delaying the podcast because a minor audio problem resulted in a major teardown of the space in which I normally work. And actually, right now, I'm not even back in my office yet. I'm not recording this in there yet. I'm actually recording this in the living room of my house, which is a much bigger, much more open space with hardwood floors, and you may hear some ambient echo in the room and that kind of thing. And I think it's a little bit more apparent when the air conditioner is running. So you may hear some weird sounds in the podcast this week that you don't normally hear. I apologize for that, but it is kind of what it is. It's a different room. It's going to sound a little different. You're going to have to live with that. So will I. Probably of the two of us, I'm the one that cares about that. But that's part of why I haven't been doing the podcast lately, is I kind of, through my own doing, lost the space I was doing it in. And I just didn't set up the stopgap until now. It took me 2 months to realize, all right, I gotta do something. And here we are. The other thing that kept me from doing the podcast is, recently on Facebook, the formerly of the Beach Boys, now of Brian Wilson, announced that he was canceling some shows for mental health reasons. He hadn't quite been feeling himself, and I shared that and just said, you know, I appreciate how Brian's struggle makes it easier for other people to talk about their issues. So going into this part of the show, I had some reservations about whether or not I'd say this, but I thought about that, and it should be easier for us to talk about these issues, and maybe me talking helps other people talk too. I've not quite felt myself lately. Not in a scary way, not in a way that anything was going to happen there other than I was going to sit around and watch TV more, but I've not felt myself lately. And part of that is, since we last talked, I've had a birthday. I'm 39 years old. I'm actually, when you think about it, when you turn 39, you're actually starting your 40th year. You're not starting your 39th year. So in many ways, I'm in year 40 right now. Because you don't get born at age one. You complete a year and it's age one. So I'm in my 40th year of life right now. And that's kind of, you know, some of that is in my head that, you know, wow. Because I remember being a kid and my dad turning 40 and all of his friends throwing him a surprise party and stuff. And now I'm getting there. I'm nearly there. And so that's in my head. I also recently completed my 10th year anniversary at my day job, which is awesome, and my bosses and coworkers treated me really well when that happened. They, you know, went out of their way to make me feel appreciated. They did a great thing with all the stuff they did for me. But it is kind of, you realize, wow, 10 years. That is a quarter of my life, and it's only going to become a larger part of my life, assuming I stay at this job, because I have no plans of going anywhere, which is also in my head. Boy, I'm not going anywhere. So, you know, there's been a lot of stuff just going on in my mind. I almost said hind. There's been a lot of stuff going on in my hind that has prevented me from just kind of thinking clearly. And I haven't felt like myself lately. And I didn't want to sit here and do this show and do it in any way other than the way that I imagine myself doing it, which is basically a positive thing, talking about things that I like and reviewing things and talking about music and that kind of thing. I didn't want to talk about things that I was really eager to talk about because I've got a big list, trust me, a huge list in my phone of stuff that I want to talk about on the show that I didn't want to do the disservice of talking about without feeling like myself and feeling good about it. And I'm going to talk about a few of those things today, and one of them has been burning in my brain as I've got to talk about this on the show, because it's a big deal to me, and you'll figure that out when we get to it. But I didn't want to talk about stuff that makes me happy when I haven't been feeling as happy as I should. I don't know if that makes sense to anybody. It probably does if you wrestle with similar issues, but I wanted to be honest about that. I wanted to tell you that, and I wanted to communicate to those of you who may also go through things like that. That, as far as I'm concerned, if you're talking to me, you're in a safe place, and you can talk about this stuff. And we should be talking about this stuff. And for the 17 people who listen to this show, I don't know what the number is. To the 4.5 people who listen to this show, to the 7 million people who listen to this show, whichever one turns out to be correct, maybe I'll go back and edit it in. To however many people listen to this show, I want you to know that if you're listening to this show, you're in a safe place and you're going to be talked to in a safe way by the guy who makes it. And if you ever leave a comment, if this kind of thing helps you, I'm glad it does. Because some people talk to me about this stuff in my real life. Not a lot of people put it in print, but a lot of people will talk about it in real life. And, yeah, I just wanted to be honest about what I've been going through and encourage other people to be honest about what they're going through, too, because that's the only way things get better. A lot has gone on. In the time that I've been away, it's only been 2 months, but good God, I had a birthday, I celebrated my 10th anniversary at the office. Father's Day came and went. Happy Father's Day, Dad. Don't worry, I said that to him on Father's Day, too. I've played a couple of gigs. What else? I've I've been given a surprising amount of whiskey by people who are just trying to get rid of their whiskey. I've got a ton of whiskey that people have just kind of handed me. Because, like, hey, I hear you're back on the sauce. Here's a bottle of Jim Beam I don't want. Like, that has been happening to me lately, and I don't know what to do about it. It's nice. I've got whiskey to last me for 6 years. That's good news. But that's been happening. Which isn't really an event, I'm realizing now that I've said that. What else? Oh, the Blues won the gigantic bowl. Stanley Cup. Wow. Sorry, I don't sports. That wasn't malicious, I promise. I couldn't remember Stanley Cup. I'm sorry to anybody to whom that is important. I didn't mean that to sound condescending either, but I heard it. I heard that was condescending to anybody to whom that's important. Not me, that's for sure. I'm sorry. I don't mean that. I'm happy for you taking some sort of personal satisfaction away from the accomplishments of others. There it goes again. I'm sorry. I don't know how to stop that. I'm not a sports guy. I'll tell you though, I did used to watch hockey in the 90s, and then I was a teenager through the 90s, and then we hit the second major players strike of my lifetime, and I decided hockey wasn't worth my time anymore, and I just never got back in. And I thought it would be disingenuous for me to jump on the bandwagon for the Blues victory here in St. Louis this year. Congratulations, if you need to hear me say that. It's not my thing. People want to throw at you, well, don't you have any town pride? Yes, I do. My town pride is in things other than sports. There's a lot about this town to be proud of. Sports isn't all of it. But for those of you who do enjoy it, I'm glad you had something to celebrate about. If I were a more cynical person, well, I'm a very cynical person, but if I were the type who thought that all sports were scripted, I would probably have scripted this differently, because I feel like the Blues would have benefited more from actually losing this one, so that, like, because, like, once you've reached the once-in-a-lifetime victory, every other victory means a little less just by the nature of it. I mean, it's great to see a team that is on top and to celebrate that next year and whatever, but, you know, maybe they win it the next year, but it's not quite as special as the year before when it was the first one, you know, in the franchise history. And like, I would have, if this were scripted, I think they could have scripted it better. Just, like, let them get real close for, like, a couple of years and really lock in that base that they haven't had since the 90s. Because hockey fans are freaky loyal, but, like, it hasn't been as I guess, universal a love in St. Louis of hockey until this past year, where everybody and their mother keeps yelling Play Gloria at me when I'm trying to play other songs at bars on my bass, and I don't want to play Gloria. I wouldn't know how to play Gloria, but that's come up at some gigs. What was I getting at? Oh, I think it would have been good to lock in that same base to, like, just kind of build it up and, like, you know, lose it for a couple of years. And then, like, you've got the base and that base isn't going anywhere, and then you win and that base stays with you. I don't know. I'm probably wrong about that, but I feel like that's how I would have done it, were it scripted. Because I'm a pro wrestling fan, so in my head, absolutely everything is scripted. And, like, well, I could book that better. As every wrestling fan thinks all of the time. But yeah, I didn't do anything special for the Blues victory. I didn't even watch it, to be honest with you. I don't remember what else I was doing, but I didn't watch it. And it's nothing to do with town pride. It's just I've never been a sports person, and I haven't watched hockey in 20 years, and I didn't feel like this was the time. You know, I didn't feel like it was... This wasn't going to get me back in, because I would have been disingenuous to myself and disingenuous to the actual sports fans who were very frustrated that they couldn't get tickets to the thing that they could get tickets to 2 months before. I don't know. But I guess probably those fans feel the same way I feel when I have trouble getting close seats for a Jason Isbell concert. It's nice that all these extra people are here. I really wish I could get closer to the stage. You know, it's probably the same emotion. It's just in a different arena or venue anyway. I guess Isbell probably doesn't play arenas many places. But yet, but he will. He does on package tours, but what am I talking about? This, you guys know how the show goes, and even for this show, this has been kind of a mess. Sorry. but yeah, the Blues are good again, I guess. That's happened since the last time we talked. I've also completed a watch through of Star Trek Voyager since we last talked. I'm now partway into a Downton Abbey watch through because my tastes are all over the map. And I'll talk about that stuff later. That's not on this episode, but that's some of the ways I've been keeping busy. That's some of the stuff I've been watching lately. And yeah, a lot of stuff's happened, and we'll have some catching up to do. I imagine I'm going to be doing shows weekly for a little bit, just to catch up. But we're going to zero in on just a few things today. I'm going to play a little bit of music off of one of my records, as I'm wont to do, and then we'll get into it. We'll do a proper episode of Empty Checking. What do you say? Thanks for waiting patiently during the hiatus, I guess is what we'll call it. And thanks for listening to this. It really does mean a lot to me to have you back with me and to be back with you. So we'll talk about stuff I like just after the break here. Oh, also my cousin Samantha got married. That's another thing that's happened since the last time I talked to you. I don't know. I don't know if she listens to the show. If she does, congratulations. Or if anybody from her immediate family does, congratulations as well, because you guys put on work for that too. Okay, let's play some music and then we'll get into this thing.
Church girls. Well, yeah, I guess they say a couple of things, but you know the one I'm talking about. Seems like a pretty good deal when you're 16. And
several weeks back, I got to do something that I've wanted to do for a very, very long time, and that is I got to see Patton Oswalt do a set of stand-up comedy. Patton is one of my favorite comedians. I have talked about him on the show in the past. I talked about his Annihilation TV special, and I think I talked about the fact that I'd picked it up on the vinyl recording that they released for that particular record store day. I've talked about Patton on the show in the past. He's one of my favorite comics. He's incredibly funny. You've definitely seen him in something or on something or heard his voice in something, like he's voicing one of the dogs in The Secret Life of Pets. He's pretty well known, and he's been a favorite comic of mine for just years and years. I can't even remember how far back it goes, but it's been a very long time. You would think I would put in the research on that kind of thing to figure out, like, I know what the first comedy special of his was that I saw. It would be pretty easy for me to go to Google and get a year on that. I'm not doing it. Because I'm Derek. That's not how this show works. You've listened to it before, probably. If not, what a weird first episode to jump in on. Patton Oswalt, one of my favorite comics. Haven't ever seen him perform live in person before, though, and I was very excited to do that. My brother and I went to see him, and I'm not the kind of guy who takes pictures and stuff during the actual event. Like, I don't like being in a crowd and being behind somebody and watching the performer through their phone. So I don't do that myself, so I'm not putting the person behind me through that. If I do, it's very quick, it's very tasteful. I never record a full song or a full set or whatever, like so many fucking people do. And they're ruining it. They're ruining it for everybody, especially me, because I'm old and furious. So I didn't get any pictures of Patton, is what I'm saying, but I will put a picture of at least the ticket stub on the blog over at emptychecking.something.stuff. What is it? Emptychecking.blogspot.com. That's what it is. Or emptychecking.something.stuff is probably available, so we could set that up and just kind of ghost the site or something. Anyway, so we got seats to that, and I'll put a picture of the ticket stub on the thing. And that's actually probably a good place to start. We had tickets that were supposed to be in like section 200 or something and just kind of far back and whatnot. And we get there and we're walking to our seats and some rando usher lady from the place waves us over, says, "Hey guys, come here, you know where your seats are?" And we said, "Well, yeah, we're section 200 or something, we're just following the signs." And she says, "Well, here, come here." And we go, "Okay, what's happening?" And she takes our tickets and she upgrades us to floor seats. So we're now on the floor and we're much closer to the stage. And it's that's a significant jump in ticket price. I think the tickets were originally something like $20 and the new tickets were more like $50 or something if we had bought them. And that was really cool. We immediately just got upgraded to the front row of seats. Because, I mean, no one told me this, but ultimately what happened is they undersold the floor. Like, they had the tickets at slightly too high a price point and didn't sell out the floor, so they just started moving people up at random. It was still a very healthy crowd, a very good-sized crowd. There were still people in the far back seats behind us where we should have been, and that was relatively full. So it was it was interesting, kind of how they did that, but they did clearly undersell the floor, so they were kind of filling it in so that when Patton looked out, it looked a little bit better for him. And that's a thing that happens at shows sometimes, and that happened here, and Dave and I benefited from it. So we got a seat upgrade, and we're sitting on these very uncomfortable sort of folding chairs that are not designed for a fat man such as I, and that was sort of the only negative part of the experience was, I don't know if I'm going to fit in this chair. I had that feeling for quite a bit of the show, and trying very hard not to just completely absorb the random stranger lady who was sitting next to me, who I'm sure was uncomfortable having a sweaty fat guy just kind of right next to her like that. Sorry, lady. Friend of the show, rando lady sitting next to me at the Patton Oswalt show. She's fine, I'm sure. It was a good set. He did, you know, entirely new stuff. He's working out what his next special is going to be. He didn't have all of it locked in. He freely admitted that he didn't have the end to one of the bits he was doing, and he was just walking away from it. And it was a lot of fun. He was very funny. He did some audience interaction, and he would declare that we were one of the darkest audiences he's ever had, just because, like, all of the answers he was getting from, like, "What's your job?" were really weird. And just, he was just getting just strange answers from the audience. You could tell that he was a little flummoxed by it and also having a really good time with it. So that was a lot of fun. And it's hard to know what to say about a comic when you're doing a thing like this. I'm probably going to undersell it because I'm not going to sit here and tell you his jokes. That's not the right thing to do. Like, that's what we call theft in the business. Instead, like, I just have to tell you it was a really good show and it was really funny, and it was worth the wait for me to, it had been that long and I got to see a guy that I've wanted to see for that long, and he was very funny, and it was rewarding to see him be funny and lighthearted and stuff, knowing some of the stuff that he's been through in his personal life. That he, for those who don't know, he was married to a woman who very suddenly passed away in her sleep, and they have a young daughter together, and he had to be a single dad for a while. Met someone new, he has remarried, he's very happy. Her name is Meredith Salinger. She's delightful on Twitter. I recommend her as a follow. I recommend Patton too. But it's, as a fan of his and as a longtime fan of his, you kind of got to watch him go on that journey, because Patton is very vocal about whatever's going on in his life, and he's very upfront, and he just kind of talks about whatever's happening to him, be it good or bad, which is, I appreciate that in a performer and in an artist. And so just being a fan of his for as long as I've been a fan, I kind of got to watch him go on that journey and a little bit go on it with him. And like in the past, I've been retweeted by Patton because I said something nice about his Annihilation special and he retweeted me and whatnot. And I've got a few friends on Twitter that are like good, like, internet friends now. Like, I don't want to make I like those friendships. I really value those friendships. It's cool when one of them, you know, likes something or comments on something and we talk for a little while. That I really like that. I love when the internet is like that. But I also don't want to say, like, these people mean the world to me, because, like, that's creepy. Like, I don't know what any of these people look like, but I do value those relationships. I just don't know what to call them. They're internet friends, I guess. You'd think I would know that now, because although, like, I was a member of a wrestling chat board in the late 90s, early 2000s, that has since, it's since defunct and, you know, it's long, long gone. But, like, on Facebook, I'm friends with several of the guys who were on that board, and women who were on that board. So, like, we're now invested in each other's lives, and there are genuine friendships there. We've never actually been in the same room together. So it's a very similar relationship that is sort of developing with some of these people I met through Patton Oswalt retweeting me. And that's valuable, but it's also weird to, like, I don't know what weight to put on that. But if any of them are listening, I appreciate that you say things to me, and I hope that you appreciate when I say things back, and I hope that none of that is creepy, because I don't want it to be. It's just kind of a nice thing, I think, in my life. But yeah, so I've got this sort of weird relationship with Patton Oswalt and just the way that he's impacted my life in that way. So it was very rewarding to be in the audience for one of his shows when there's all that weight in my head about it, you know? And that was a lot of fun. And afterward, my brother and I went to Waffle House, where my brother came up with a catchphrase for them, but I don't remember what it was. It was something like, Waffle House, it almost tastes like what we say it is. It was something like that. And it was a good line. It was funny. I think he put it on Facebook after that, but I should look that up too. But I'm Derek. And it was a really fun night, and there were some coworkers of mine that went to that. One of my coworkers was sitting two rows in front of me, and it was kind of, hey, Chris, how you doing? Hey, Derek. Yeah. And another coworker of mine saw me walk by but didn't have time to catch me. He saw me the next Monday. He was like, hey, I saw you at the Patton thing. I was like, oh, why didn't you say hi? And he was like, oh, you were walking with your brother. Or whoever. I informed him, I think, that was my brother. He didn't just know that. Why am I telling you all this? The point is, it was a really fun night. I really enjoyed it. It was cool to see Patton Oswalt. I highly recommend seeing him if you haven't, and if you don't have the opportunity to do so, and you never have, I would recommend looking into one of his comedy specials. Annihilation is deeply moving, but he's got plenty of other comedy specials that are a little bit more lighthearted and just sort of fun. So give Patton a chance if you haven't yet, and so on and so forth. We met as children, grew up Christian, grew apart, came together, and fell apart again. In high school, trying to look cool. Some things never change, you know I'm still trying. And then in the month of May, right around my birthday, I got to do something that I just love doing. I got to see The Who perform here in St. Louis, Missouri. That's always such a good time for me. I'm always so happy at a Who show. The Who is my favorite band. I've probably threatened this in the past, but at some point there's a Who episode of this show that needs to happen where I just talk about The Who for like 3 hours. I love The Who, and that is a love that is shared by my dad and my brother, and it's hard to even put into words how much The Who means to me. I guess the best way I can do that is I'm a Bible college graduate, and one of the things that happens when you're in Bible college is when you're a senior and you're going to be graduating, they let you kind of construct your own chapel service that the school goes to, and you sort of arrange how everything happens and whatnot. And as part of my chapel service, I played the song The Real Me by The Who off the Quadrophenia album, and just sort of let that play over a slideshow of stuff that was important to me at the time. And after the chapel was over, one of the professors came up to me and said, so you like The Who, huh? And I said, no, I love The Who the way some people love Jesus. That was my answer in the Bible college. So that may put into perspective how much I love The Who. That my dad and brother are certainly, I don't know if they would phrase it exactly that way, but they certainly, The Who means a lot to them too. Probably just as much to them as they do to me in many ways. At some points, possibly more, I don't know. But this Who show was kind of extra special to me. It was a little bit before my birthday, so it was right in that kind of birthday week window. So that was kind of my gift from my dad, was we went to see The Who, and that was awesome. But this was special to me for a lot of reasons. One of which is because I didn't think I was going to see The Who again, because the last time they toured, it sounded like it was going to be the last time they toured. So it was kind of a surprise to find out that not only were they touring again, they were coming to St. Louis. So that was exciting, and it was kind of, oh good, I get another Who show. Somehow, the gods have arranged for me to see The Who again. So that felt really good. But it was also interesting because this is 2019, and the first time I saw The Who was in 1989. And that's a 30-year difference, if you can't do that math. That is on the nose, 30-year difference. And in 1989, they were celebrating the 20th anniversary of the Tommy album. And in 2019, they were celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Tommy album. So they were it was a very Tommy-heavy show both times. This time around, they actually were playing with the symphony. So we got to hear symphonic arrangements of most of the Tommy stuff that you want to hear, and also some other Who stuff that maybe you wouldn't have expected so much to hear. They had kind of a Tommy suite up front. And I'll tell you this, the overture to Tommy sounded amazing with the full symphony. It was jaw-droppingly good, because you kind of worry about that setup. It was like, okay, it's gonna be all right, but is it gonna be good? Is it gonna be one of those really meaningful Who shows that, you know, is The Who gonna be the same? Or is it going to be, as Daltrey said of the 1989 tour, The Who on Ice? You know, is like, which version is it gonna be? Which I would be happy with either, honestly, because I fell in love with The Who in 1989 during The Who on Ice tour, so it's kind of, it's an interesting proposition to say that The Who's doing something weird and different to me, because I'll be on board for it. There's also the chance with something like that of the show just completely falling apart, which I would also absolutely be on board for, because my favorite thing about The Who's music is that it always sounds like it's right on the edge of being just a complete catastrophe. And that makes me so happy to be part of. And I just love that. That sort of, not that they were of this genre, but the sort of punk rock mentality of it. I'm always attracted to that. And nobody does that like The Who. And it was cool to hear the Tommy stuff. It was cool to hear it with the big orchestra. My dad, who wasn't feeling very well, and even that night, even took out his phone for a while, the thing that I will never do, to record a little bit of them doing See Me, Feel Me, which is, I think, probably his favorite Who song, or at least it's way up there. And so Dad kind of has that. And this all, of course, colored by the fact that Pete Townsend really hates Tommy. And he makes that pretty apparent during, at least he did in St. Louis, he made that pretty apparent. And that once they were done with the Tommy suite, he said something to the effect of, "This next song is the song that we normally would start the set with if we weren't doing the Tommy thing, and just imagine that the set is starting now," which is sort of subtle. But later he's talking about Quadrophenia and says that this next one's from an album, you know, we've been doing the Tommy thing, but this next one's from an album that a lot of people, myself included, think is a damn sight better. And he's not even trying to hide his disdain for his own work, which I sort of love about Pete. Boy, there's a lot to talk about from this show. You know what? Let me read the set list to you real quick, because I've got the set list here in front of me. This is the thing I researched, is The Who show. They started out with the Tommy suite, which was Overture, It's a Boy, 1921, Amazing Journey, Sparks, Pinball Wizard, We're Not Gonna Take It, / See Me, Feel Me. That was the sort of Tommy suite. And then they kicked into Who Are You? They did Eminence Front. They did Imagine a Man. Imagine a fucking man. They did Imagine a Man, which I never would have seen coming. That was mind-blowing to me, because that's off of the By Numbers album, which is one of my favorite Who albums that isn't Quadrophenia. It's sort of lesser appreciated. I guess the hit off that album was Squeezebox, but that also has Slipkid on it. It has Dreaming from the Waste. It has Imagine a Man. It has Blue, Red, and Gray. How Many Friends, They're All in Love. That might be in the order that they're on the disc in, even. Like, I might have that in my brain. I really like that album, and I never thought I'd hear them do Imagine a Man live, which was incredible. What was I doing? Reading the set. That's how I got here. Eminence Front, Imagine a Man, joined together, and then the symphony left the stage for a bit, and they did Substitute, The Seeker, Behind Blue Eyes, Won't Get Fooled Again, which they did just Roger and Pete with an acoustic guitar, which I want to see them tour that. I want to see them do just Roger and Pete together and just do like a theater tour. Like, I would love to see that duo together at the Fox Theater or whatever the Peabody's called now, Stifle, I guess, or Stiefel, however you say it. I would love to see that there. You know, I would love to see that venue with just an acoustic show, just those two guys. Roger can pick up a guitar, too. He plays, too. Moving on. They did Won't Get Fooled Again acoustic. They also did Tea and Theater together, which was the only song they did off of the Endless Wire record, which was their most recent studio effort, although they've got another one coming that I'm very excited about. And as the guy who they kind of did Endless Wire for, I wish they'd have done a little bit more off of it. But Tea and Theater is a great song. They did that. The orchestra then came back out. Or symphony? I'm not sure which it was. I guess orchestra, because it wasn't... No, they had horns and stuff, so it'd be a symphony. It doesn't matter. Look, they came back out, and they did The Real Me, And I'm One, The Punk and the Godfather, 515, Drowned, The Rock, and Love, Rain, or Me from Quadrophenia, that chunk. And they closed out the show with Babo O'Reilly. Strong set. You could be forgiven for wishing that they had done I Can't Explain or I Can See for Miles or whatever else. But, you know, you saw that stuff last time if you saw them on the tour that we all thought that they were leaving on. So that was it was a good set. I really liked that set. The orchestra added a lot. It was a lot of fun. Pete Townsend's voice was shot. He was having trouble singing all night, which at one point he said his voice was in giving him problems, but he doesn't think it would make much of a difference. Very wry joke at his own expense. But he did sound, as my dad pointed out, a bit like Jimmy Durante. So it was kind of interesting. Let's see. What else to say about this show? It was just such a good time, and I bought shirts. I'll put pictures of the shirts on the website. I bought kind of a old picture of Pete and Raj, and also a baseball jersey that I was immediately informed was in Cubs colors, but it's just, so what? It's in Who colors? But anyway, I bought a baseball jersey because that's my gimmick. If a band releases a shirt, if I see them and they've got a jersey, I'm gonna buy the jersey. That's just become my thing. And there was a lot about the show that made me happy. I've got a page of notes here. It was cool to hear Imagine a Man, like I said. It was cool to hear Won't Get Fooled Again. Cool to hear Tea and Theater. Cool that there's a new album coming. Oh, that's something. The Real Me, when they did that. If you're familiar with the song, it has always been very driven by the bass guitar. That sort of signature John Entwistle line is the main part of the song. And the bass was a little bit lacking in this particular presentation of it. But it did make me really happy at one point where just listening to the symphony and the strings and whatnot, there was a specific section where the entire symphony just played one of the sort of signature whistle runs from the piece. It was like, they needed an entire symphony to replace him. It just made me happy on the inside to know that. So that, even though it lacked a little bit of the bass, I don't even know who the new kid is they have on bass. They've got a new guy. It's not Pino Palladino anymore. It's some other guy. So he wasn't loud enough in the mix for that. But even with that, it was cool to hear the orchestra do that and go, they needed all of them. They needed all of them to replace Entwistle. That just, that did my heart well. It was cool in Babo O'Reilly that they actually had a violinist to play the outro part. because we've all gotten used to, over the years, the outro violin solo being played by Roger Daltrey on a harmonica instead of on a violin, as it is on the album. So it was cool to have the violin there, and that was kind of noteworthy, and that made me happy. The show was opened by a band called the Hillbenders, who are from Springfield, Missouri. And they are a bluegrass act. And you might wonder, why would a bluegrass act open for The Who? The Hillbenders released their own bluegrass version of Tommy. And that was brought to Pete Townsend's attention. And he listened to that, and he listened to their new album. And he really liked them, and he gave them the opening act gig. And that's just a really cool story. They did something that I'm sure that some member of the band probably thought was dumb, and it got them their biggest gig ever, and it got them a lot of exposure. And I'll tell you this, I've since gone out and bought their version of Tommy, and I've since gone out and bought their newest album, which is eponymous, it's just The Hillbenders, and they're both great. I like them both a lot. So check out The Hillbenders, too, while you're at this. This is a free bonus review. Hillbenders were great. And I loved the show. The show was a lot of fun, and I like having the merch, and I like the whole experience of going to a Who show and whatnot. Can't be overstated, though, that the thing that I appreciated most about it was that I got to go to it with my dad and brother, because we did that in 1989. We went to see The Who together, and I kind of think of that night as one of the turning points of my life where I... Like, that's the night that I decided, oh, I have to get serious about playing music. I looked down and saw Pete Townsend jumping around and realized I want to be that guy. And I'm not saying that I've become that guy. I'm an insurance claims rep. And I play in dive bars occasionally. I'm, you know, whatever. But, like, that's one of the nights where I just kind of decided, oh, there's a release here that I want to feel all the time. And like that, going to that 1989 Who show sort of put me on a path that's led to me releasing 10 albums and being the musician that I am. And my dad and brother were present for that. And it's 30 years later and we got to see The Who together again. And that's pretty damn impressive if you ask me. And that's something to be grateful for. And I think I've even said on this show before in the past, I'm trying to get better at recognizing when I'm happy at the time that I'm happy rather than in hindsight. And so much of that night, I was just kind of grinning from ear to ear because I was seeing something I loved with people that I loved. And that was you don't always get to do that 30 years after the fact. And I'm very grateful for that, and I was very grateful for that night, and I'm very grateful that we took a moment once we kind of got away from the venue and back to the casino where we had met up in the first place. There's a long story there, but we met at a casino. Once we got back to the casino that night, I'm grateful that we took a moment to get a selfie of the three of us, just kind of happy from having seen a Who show together. So that's one I should really get printed and put on my wall somewhere, because that was that's sort of a special memory for me. And the fact that it happened on so near my birthday as a birthday thing for me matters a lot too. So it was a big deal for me, that show, and it was a good show, and it was a lot of fun, and I'm very much looking forward to whatever the next Who album is, whenever that finally drops. I don't know that they've got a date on it. And I'm looking forward to reading Pete Townsend's novel that's coming out in November. And anything involving The Who, I'm kind of down for. But that particular show, when they were here in St. Louis, was a really great night. And I'm really glad I got to do that. And yeah, I hope you have stuff like that in your life, too. Listen to The Who. They're one of the best things you can listen to that we've created as people, at least to date.
With the same crowd, still chasing after the
Last but not least, on the list of things I've recently seen, my brother and I, all of these stories involve my brother and or my dad. My brother and I went to see Marc Maron, another favorite comic of mine. That was recent. That was here in the month of June, so that's still pretty fresh in my mind. We went and saw Maron at Helium Comedy Club here in St. Louis. It's actually in a mall. It's in the Galleria. It's in a mall. I'm a big Marc Maron fan. He's another one of those guys I've been a fan of forever and I've never seen. I've liked Maron since the 90s. And like he used to, back when Comedy Central showed comedians, they used to just, like, Maron would show up in their comedy stuff. They would do these, like, different, can't remember the name of any of the shows, but they would do these different shows where it would just be couple of jokes from several different comics, and it was just sort of put together sort of like a greatest hits package or something, sort of like you were watching, sort of like in the MTV format. You'd get like a little bit of a comic, like you watching MTV, you'd get a song from a band and then there'd be a song from another band back when MTV showed videos. And Comedy Central was like that with comedians. You'd get a couple of jokes from a comic and then they'd show another comic, and sometimes they'd show full specials and that kind of thing. But I was, I got super familiar with Marc Maron that way, because that's, I watched a lot of Comedy Central in the 90s and 2000s, and became a big fan of his, and I hadn't gotten the chance to see him either until this last month. And I'll say this, none of what I'm about to say reflects on Marc Maron. He was great. It was a great show, a lot of fun. I can't wait for his next special if his set's going to remain true to what he did. I don't like going to comedy clubs. I don't like them. I find them poorly organized, because comedy clubs are really the last thing that the last sort of industry that thinks Ricky Ricardo might stop in and do a set. That's they're just structured really badly. Like I ordered tickets for this event about a month in advance, but they didn't get sent to my house. Like the comedy clubs don't send you your tickets. They hold them at the will call, and you have to show up to the will call no less than 45 minutes before, but no more than 2 hours before to get your tickets. Like, you can't just have a ticket and go in. Like, they don't do that. The tickets are available 2 hours before the show, regardless of when you pre-ordered them. That's stupid, and that needs to change. I don't like that about comedy clubs. You're then kind of herded into groups and sat in segments, and you don't get to pick where you sit. You're just kind of shoved wherever they shove you. I don't love that. I also don't love the two-drink minimum. Like, the $30 that I paid for the ticket wasn't enough. You want me to spend another $20 once I'm in the place? You don't profit from the ticket, I guess? Two-drink minimum. Don't love that. Although I actually got out of this one just because the wait service was so poor that by the time, like, I hadn't finished my first drink when she came by to ask me what I wanted for my second one, and I said, I've still got this. She's like, are you ready for another? I was like, no. And she wandered off and didn't wander back until it was time to start giving people the checks. So I actually got out of the second drink by accident just because I hadn't had time to finish my first drink. That's a dumb construct, too. The two-drink minimum, that's ridiculous and is antiquated, and they need to stop that, especially for a touring act when you've already paid your $30 or more, depending on the show. I understand if it's a local act, you paid $10, it's a open mic comedy thing or whatever. Yeah, okay, fine. I can see the two-drink minimum on that, I guess, so that it's worth putting on the show. But when you've got a national guy who's there for 3 nights and 5 shows, and each of those shows is sold out, you don't need to tell me that there's a two-drink minimum. That's highway robbery, Helium. And by the way, Helium, as I said, is in a mall. It's not a freestanding structure. It's in the Galleria. It's in a mall where it's right next to a grill that's also in the mall that for some reason has valet parking and won't let you park certain places at the mall because they are so worried that the 6 people who are patronizing the mall might not have any place to park if people who are there for the comedy club park there. The place is in a mall, and it needs to stop pretending that it's anything other than a room in a mall. So I don't like comedy clubs. I especially don't like this one. But I went to it because I wanted to see Marc Maron. And that is where he was. And that is the thing I had to put up with. I don't love comedy clubs. I don't love comedy clubs that are in malls particularly. But Maron put on a really good set and was worth the indignity of going to a comedy club. I'll tell you this. You all have heard me mention in the past that I don't like going to the pageant here in St. Louis. I think it's badly run. But I will take the pageant over a comedy club any day of the week and twice on Sundays. I don't like comedy clubs. But the show itself was really good. I really enjoyed the show. Maron was funny. The opening act was funny. I can't remember her name. I only heard it once, and it didn't stick with me. But she was really funny. She got the crowd in a good mood, and then Maron came out and killed. He was great. I saw him on the first night, first set of his five sets. That was the one I saw, and it was a really good time. I'll tell you this, both the opening act and then Maron subsequently on his podcast pointed out that there was a woman there with a annoying laugh who the opening act seemed to take some issue with and kept calling attention to. And Maron also mentioned it on the podcast in a negative way, although he didn't call attention to her during his show in St. Louis. He waited until he was broadcasting on the internet for everybody in the world to hear. That's not a very cool move. I like the guy, but that's not a cool move. Because, yes, she had a very irritating laugh. She had a distracting laugh, if you noticed it. But once everybody was laughing, it wasn't as noticeable. It was pretty noticeable during the opening act. But once the headliner came on, who people were there to see, and who, no offense to the opening act, she was very funny, but Maron's funnier. The irritating laugh blended in with the other laughs, and it was okay. I don't like that the opening act called her out on it, and I don't like that Maron called her out on it on his podcast. I don't think that's a very classy thing to do, because this is someone who's there and who's laughing and is giving you that's what you want. You want someone who's laughing. Yeah, okay, she has an irritating laugh. There's not a lot you can do about how you laugh. And to criticize someone's laugh, do you know what you're actually saying when you say someone's got an annoying laugh? You're saying to that person, hey, you know how when you're really happy, when you're overflowing with joy and that joy has to come out in some way, you have to express that joy in some way so that sound comes out of your mouth that expresses joy. You know how you laugh and that sound that is meant to express joy and happiness and how much you appreciate me and the thing that I just said, you know that sound you make? I fucking hate that sound. It's bad and you should feel bad about that sound. Your joy that you appreciate so much, the fact that you love what I just said, that makes me sick. It irritates me, it puts me off, and it makes me want to leave your fucking town. That's what you're saying when you criticize someone's laugh. I don't think that was a fair thing to do. The lady was just laughing at a comedy club. That's what is supposed to happen. But other than that, it was a really good show. It was really funny. Marc was really, really funny. Whether or not I disagree with him criticizing an audience member on his podcast, that she didn't do anything wrong. She didn't heckle. She laughed. That wasn't a cool thing that he did. But I still think he's a really great comic. I think he's really funny. And I had a lot of fun at that show, and I actually got to meet him afterward, which was pretty cool. Which I just wouldn't have imagined that he was the kind of guy that would do a meet and greet after a set. But it was interesting. We were filing out of the room, and Maron was just standing there by the door greeting people like a pastor. And I just had to kind of think of something to say really quick. So I just said something like, hey, man, I've been a fan of yours since the 90s. This is my first time seeing you. And he said, like, his response was, wow, really? I was like, yeah, Comedy Central specials and whatnot. I was like, wow, hey, I'm better now. And I said, yeah, you are, but all right, you know, like, what am I supposed to say to that? And he started greeting the next person. There wasn't time for, like, a real conversation, but it was just kind of cool to meet somebody whose work you've appreciated for 20 years or whatever, and just say, hey, thanks for doing that. I've been a fan for a long time, and it was cool to see you do that. So that is how I feel about it, regardless of my feelings on comedy clubs and regardless of my criticism of his and his opening act's criticism of a lady who didn't deserve it. I would encourage that woman to laugh as loudly as she can, as much as she can, wherever she can, and anybody who doesn't like it, be damned. As much as I may feel a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth because of that, he was really funny, and I really loved his show, and I'm glad he didn't mention it during the show that I was at, because that would have felt bad. It would have taken away from his show. He just kind of let it go, even though he heard it enough that it apparently bothered him, and he mentioned it on his podcast. I don't know. Maybe it's wrong of me to judge that, but I think that lady should be allowed to laugh whenever she wants to, as should all of us. This world needs more laughter, because it seems like lately we only have things to cry about or to scream about, and it's lovely to go somewhere and laugh. In fact, even lovelier to go somewhere and laugh at those things, because so much of his act was about Trump and about politics and about how the world's going crazy. It was great to laugh at that stuff, because the only way to take power away from something is to ridicule it sometimes, and that's, we've certainly got a lot to ridicule in this day and age, and I'm glad that there are comics out there leading these little sort of revival meetings that we all get to go to. Maybe that's why he was greeting people after it. That was a fun show. It was a cool show, and I had a really good time with it, and I got out having to only buy one drink, so there's not a lot for me to complain about there. I hope it doesn't come across as his criticism of that lady ruined my good time or anything. It didn't. It was a really good time. I would absolutely go to see him again, and I would absolutely pay to see him again. And I've been listening to his podcast since, as he's been putting it out. At least when it interests me, there are a couple of people who I don't know who they are, and I don't care. You know, that he's interviewed. That's how these things go. You guys know. I'm sure there are episodes of my podcast that you've skipped. And if you haven't, then what are you doing, man? There's other podcasts out there that are, a lot of them are funnier than this. They don't, they're more to your interests, maybe. What am I doing? Why am I telling you about other podcasts? The point is, I had fun at the comedy show, and that's kind of it, I guess. Mark Maron is funny, and you should see Mark Maron. He's got a bunch of comedy specials on Netflix, too, and I'll put a picture of my ticket stub for him up on the blog, because I don't take pictures during stuff, like I said before. I think we can call that an episode. Not bad for the first episode back. Not great, but not bad. We're back. Anyway, we're getting back in the swing of this. We're getting back used to it. I've got a lot of stuff that I want to talk about. In the next episode, we'll do some music stuff. I've got such a pile of music to get through. Maybe we'll just do a big music catch-up or something next week. I've got a couple theme shows that I've got sort of outlined that I would like to do that... who knows when I'll get to those. There's so much I have to catch up on. And like I mentioned at the start, I've watched a whole Star Trek series. I'm watching Downton Abbey now. There's plenty of stuff to talk about, and we'll talk about all of it. I'm back. I promise you that I'm back, and I'll be doing this for a while, and it'll be a little bit more regular here for at least a little bit, assuming nothing goes horribly wrong, as it is wont to do from time to time. Thanks a lot for your attention this week. I really appreciate you hanging with me on this thing and hanging in there and waiting for a new episode and all that stuff. You should get them more regularly, at least for a little while here on out. Thank you so much for listening. I hope that you had as good of a time listening to it as I had making it, because I enjoyed doing this. If you do like the show, you can go to some websites of interest that I'm going to try to pull up on my phone. Oh God, my phone only has 2% battery life. This might not go great. It's a whole list, and like I know all of the websites, but I'll forget one of them If I don't pull up the list, here it is. Go to emptychecking.blogspot.com. There's photos and stuff there. The show itself is hosted at soundcloud.com/emptychecking. It's also available on iTunes and CastBox and other podcasting-type apps. Just start typing Empty Checking with Derek Brink, and it pops right up. It'll never be on Spotify. I'm unwilling to do the things that they want me to do to get onto Spotify. No one should have to live like that. If you want to know more about me, go over to derekbrink.com. There's plenty of stuff to click on there. And if you like the music that you hear throughout the show, it's all available for free at derekbrink.bandcamp.com. Just put in $0 as your purchase price, and you can have it for free. I don't even collect your email address, and I won't know that you took it. Thanks so much for your time. Thanks so much for listening. And if you liked the show, or even if you didn't, who knows, you might like it next week. So check us out next time. It's been long enough that I forgot I do outro jokes.